This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a new study has found that giving low-income families monthly cash is correlated with better brain development for their babies. We'll talk to a couple of the researchers involved. Now, after the Green Bay Packers' disappointing playoff loss last weekend, many fans are wondering about Aaron Rodgers' future with the team. Rodgers acknowledged those questions after Saturday's game. Here he is at a post-game press conference.
It's going to be a tough decision, a lot of things to weigh in the coming weeks. But, man, just so much gratitude for this city and this organization and such a long career here.
It's been a rocky season off the field with a controversy last November over Rodgers' vaccination status and a preseason filled with disputes between Rodgers and team management. What would it mean for the Packers to lose their MVP quarterback? We're talking about that now, and you can too at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see Rodgers stay, or do you want to see him go? Did the controversy about his vaccination status change the way you feel about him? How important do you think he is to the Packers? Are you ready for a post-Rodgers era? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Tom Silverstein is the Green Bay Packers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal-Sentinel. Tom, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be with you.
Well, Rodgers has another year left in his contract, as I understand it, but NFL contracts are tricky. Is he really, does he have some mobility when it comes to staying or leaving?
Yeah, he does. The biggest change in his contract from last year is that they removed the final year. And so this 2022 is his final year. And so the Packers have to make a decision. They have to decide, okay, are they going to re-sign him so that they he doesn't leave in free agency next year and they don't get anything? Or do they trade him? Because if they don't trade him and they don't redo his contract, he's probably not coming back. So I don't know. It's a tricky situation, but a lot of it's going to just really kind of the balance of it is how he and the general manager, what their discussions are going to be in the coming weeks.
We heard from Gabe on Facebook who says if we can get a king's ransom trading away, well, that's probably the prudent thing to do. Tom, you wrote about this saying, yeah, that might be the right answer. Trade Rodgers, build up the defense that ended the season pretty strong.
Yeah, and here's the thing. So if they re-sign Rodgers at a market value contract, it's not going to leave them much money to do anything else. And so they could re-sign Rodgers, they could re-sign Davante Adams, but that means some of their really good players are going to have to go. Some of their free agents they won't be able to re-sign. Devondre Campbell, who was an absolute blessing to their defense this year, cornerback Rasul Douglas, tight end Robert Tonyan, wide receiver Marquez Valdes-Scantling, wide receiver Alan Lazard. They would have to restructure a whole bunch of contracts, and they may have to cut a couple guys like Za'Darius Smith. So every penny you spend is accounted for, and they have to make that decision. Bringing Rodgers back, does that give them a chance to win it all next year?
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Nate is with us in Sauk City. Nate, hi.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I'm a big Packer fan, season ticket holder, and so on. I was very disappointed with Aaron. I think he should learn a lesson from this, that you need to be franked, and you need to think about not only the fact your own personal point of view, but you think about your role as a as a personality. A lot of people, of course, follow him, pay attention to him, respect him. And what he did was really dangerous to a lot of people's health.
And you're talking about the vaccination statements in particular here, Nate?
Yes, I am. I think he totally failed to be credible in the way he dealt with that. I'm not saying he shouldn't be back as quarterback. I think there's two different things there, his public image and his ability to play football.
I gotcha. Nate, I want to give a listen to Aaron Rodgers on the Pat McAfee Show this week talking about blowback from this issue, the vaccination controversy. Here's a listen.
There were a ton of people tuning in, rooting against us for one reason and one reason only. It's because of my vaccination status and them wanting to see us lose so they could pile on.
Now, listening to Nate, I don't think he wanted the Packers to lose by any means, Tom, but how big a deal is this? How, or when it comes to Aaron Rodgers' future in the NFL, the whole hullabaloo over his vaccination statements and status?
Well, I think if you're a team that's considering trading for him, you have to consider it. I mean, he's got his own agenda and he's got a medium for it, which is the McAfee Show. And he can go on there and say pretty much anything he wants and not be challenged on it. And so, yeah, I think that's something teams will think about, but, you know, talent kind of overweighs everything in most cases. And I don't think it'll hurt him, but I do know in Wisconsin that, you know, just based on anecdotal evidence, that there's a lot of people who have turned on him. And I don't think it's just the vaccination. I think it's, if it is the vaccination, it's that and the fact that he hasn't held up his end of the bargain in the playoffs. So if you're going to talk all that, you know, and have a strong opinion and you're going to hold out during the off season and say you're not happy, you know, it's a really good thing to come back and win a Super Bowl. So he wasn't able to do that. And I think that's hurt him in public opinion. And I don't think it's just because of the vaccination stand.
Thanks for that call, Nate. Here's a couple point counterpoint from our Facebook page. Lisa writes, his preseason behavior and lying about being vaccinated and receiving special treatment was really unbecoming. Lisa says, I expect more from a sports star. I am so utterly disappointed. Christopher writes, I think our fan base as Green Bay fans have become very polarized and hateful towards the man. I believe to this day he still is one of the best quarterbacks Green Bay has been lucky to have. We are talking about Aaron Rodgers and his future with the Packers or elsewhere. Tom Silverstein is with us from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Glenn is with us in Toma. Glenn, hi.
Yes, I was listening to your program. I'm originally from San Diego. I've been in football, well, pretty much all my life. I played semi-pro ball for the Bears for a few years.
Wow.
The reason I'm calling is you need Rodgers, you need Adams, and you can't really blame the loss of that game on Rodgers. That is the most, that's poor excuse. Your special teams has been lousy all year. They haven't really, they've let guys go to the 30-40 yard line pretty much every game. You know, it's hard to beat even an average quarterback on the opposite team when you let them start out at the 40-yard line. Come on, guys.
Glenn, thanks for the call. Tom, Aaron Rodgers' performance in the regular season, no question, one of the greats of all time. In this playoff game, what do you think of what Glenn had to say?
Well, you know, you're great. The best players, your greatest players, overcome all kinds of odds. And if you watched the Buffalo and Kansas City game, those two defenses were exhausted and, you know, both were liabilities to their team. And what happened? The quarterbacks just took over the game. They just became so good and raised their level of play. And the thing about it, you know, the week before, the 49ers had a punt blocked. Their special teams was under huge criticism, and yet they won the game. And it's because, you know, in certain situations, yeah, one part of your game is not going to play well. It's pretty likely that's going to happen. But when you have an MVP quarterback, he's supposed to be able to overcome those kind of things. And I don't think he played to the standard that we saw during the regular season.
Thanks for the call, Glenn. We're talking to Tom Silverstein, Green Bay Packers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's with us today to talk about the future of Aaron Rodgers. Maybe with the Packers, maybe not. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is Rodgers a crucial part of the team in your mind? Do you want to see him back for one more year? That's probably it. It sounds like if it is one more year, or do you think it's time to part ways? Do you base that on football performance or off-season controversies, during the season controversies related to Rodgers? Call in at 800-642-1234. Should he stay or should he go? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk about what's next for Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. Tom Silverstein is with us from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. We want to hear your thoughts, your feelings, your questions about the possibility that Rodgers may not come back to the Packers next year. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. If you just tried calling in and didn't get anything, we had a little glitch there. Try again. 800-642-1234 is the number. Let's go back to your calls now. Catherine is with us in Milwaukee. Catherine, hi.
Hello. I'm not a super fan of any team, but I have family members that were diehard fans of Aaron Rodgers. But his antics off the field, preseason, post, and post this, championship attempt has turned everyone off. And he makes he offers no excuse for it. And he's given people more reason. It's unbelievable for him to say that people watched a game to cheer against him. That's just minimizing the intelligence of the fans. And what he has done is given people reasons to boo him post the game. That interview that he gave on the radio show that he goes on is horrible. And what I think Aaron Rodgers is in need of is a psychotherapist, because he wants to have his cake and eat it too. And he really doesn't make any sense. We don't know what he's unhappy about on any day.
Catherine, just briefly, your diehard family members who are super Packer fans, what'd they do this year? Did they watch the Packers guys?
They watch every game, but they are basically of the mind it's time for him to go. He has insulted the management even before the playoff. I happened to hear an interview he gave that, he's saying something about management, which should have been between management. This is after things have been smoothed out. So he's never going to stop. He's a petulant individual who is on some kind of ego trip. How on earth do you get to be the person with all the expertise and you've done your research? And then he says at the end of the interview on Tuesday, he hopes he's influenced somebody. We hope he hasn't.
Catherine, thanks for the call. Strong feelings there, Tom. If there's a significant portion of the fan base that feels, I don't know, a tenth as much as Catherine does about Rodgers, is that a sign to maybe start something new next year?
Yeah, I think it is for him that maybe a fresh start would be going to a place where he'd be adored once again. Now, I think he's wrong that people were cheering for him to lose because he wasn't vaccinated. I think maybe non-Packers fans were, but I don't believe Packer fans were cheering against him. I think for the most part, they wanted a Super Bowl more than anything and would be more than willing to forgive him for everything he pulled off if he won a Super Bowl or led them to a Super Bowl. So I think he's wrong there. And, he lives in a bubble, as do many of these guys. They don't have a real good grasp of what regular people go through or what buzzes around the street or how people view things. And he's obviously entitled to his opinion on all of this. But what I think bothered most people was that he was so misleading with his facts. As they say, you're entitled to your opinions, but not your facts.
Thanks for the call. I'll go next to Josh in Oak Creek. Josh, hi.
Hi, everybody. My comment is that Rodgers, I like what the lady said a second ago, that he wants his cake and eat it too. He would want Devontae Adams and Jones to stay with him. And if the Packers were able to do that, as you said earlier, there would be an entire different staff around him to even financially make that happen. So assuming that they did make that happen, he also has made it abundantly clear that he will not be part of a rebuild. So even if he got Devontae Adams himself and Jones to stay, and maybe Cobb because he had to have him, he's not going to want to be part of the rebuild anyway. He's made it clear. So therefore, as much as I'm an avid Packer fan, watching every year, watched every game, love Rodgers, he's got to go.
Josh, thanks for the call. And Tom, you were hinting at that earlier. Even if Rodgers stays, because of the way the salary cap works, we're going to be watching a very different Packers team next year, one way or another.
Yeah, so your caller brought up a good point. Randall Cobb will not be with the team next year. His salary cap number's too high. They're not going to bring him back. They want some younger guys to come through. Mercedes Lewis, one of his favorite players, probably won't be back. They can't afford him. And they need to move on from, you know, these guys who are in their upper 30s, even though Mercedes Lewis is a great human being and a great blocker. But, you know, it's at some point you have to move on. He's going to lose Mason Crosby, one of his guys who's been with him longer than anybody else on the team. He's going to be a salary cap casualty. So it's going to be him. It's going to be Devontae Adams. And then who knows who else. And he did say he doesn't want to be part of a rebuild. And I think that's what the Packers are heading for.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to Tom Silverstein from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, looking at the future of Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. Still time for your calls at 800-642-1234. Bruce joins us next in Trevor. Bruce, hi.
Hi. One real quick point. Isn't he worth more to the Packers now as someone to trade in order to get some talent that would be affordable? Secondly, he is not a cold weather player. He sucked that day, as did a lot of those Packers. The cold, they couldn't do it. The coach on the 49ers, he played a tape of the Packers losing to the Giants in Lambeau Field a while back. And he says, you know, a team that's ready to play football can go in there to Lambeau Field and beat these guys. And those guys believed in themselves.
Bruce, thanks for the call. That second point, Tom, Aaron Rodgers, Bruce says, not a reliable playoff season, cold weather quarterback that could really own Lambeau.
I believe there's something to that. So, you know, he made reference to the 2007 game, which Brett Favre was the quarterback in that game. Brutally cold game. And Brett Favre was, what, 37, 38 at that time? And he had the same problem. It was just, when you're that old, it hurts to play in that cold. It hurts us, you know, to walk. You know, it's not the same as a 27-year-old playing in that frigid weather. And I saw it with Favre, and I believe I saw it with Rodgers on Saturday night. I think the cold does affect him. He was a very good cold weather quarterback, an outstanding cold weather quarterback. He got really big hands. He could handle the ball. He could throw it through the wind. And age knocks that out of you. And maybe he's thinking about that too, about the next place that he wants to play.
Thanks for the call. Mary Beth joins us next in Gladstone, Michigan. Mary Beth, hi.
Hi there. I just wanted to say that he has stayed too long. He reminds me of people who've stayed too long in whatever organization, and they start thinking more about themselves than the organization. And we could see this coming when he was interviewed by Erin Andrews at the start of the season, when she asked him what his goals were, and he said to be happy, you know. And I thought, well, couldn't you say a winning season or, you know, whatever. But he talked about being happy. And I thought, here we go. This is a problem.
Mary Beth, thanks for the call. We're just about out of time, Tom, but that nothing wrong with wanting to be happy, I don't think. But the idea that, you know, the Aaron Rodgers versus the Packers organization, who is in the right or wrong? Do you have thoughts on that looking back?
It was, you know, there's fault on both sides. And I understand that some of the things that he was upset at, but I really think it all came down to them drafting Jordan Love. I don't think it had anything to do with anything else, that he felt disrespected by them picking Jordan Love, just like Brett Favre was upset when they took Aaron Rodgers. I think it's just a matter, I don't know. You can't win it's hard to win without a great quarterback. And if anybody who's been a Packer fan through the 70s remembers, it's brutal when you don't have a quarterback.
Or Bears
but
fans.
That's why they took Jordan Love, and they thought that they would be able to transition into another great quarterback. So that's the dice they have to roll this offseason. Go with Rodgers or go with Love.
Mary Beth, thanks for the call. One tea leaf, Tom, a coaching change, a Packers assistant went to Denver in just our last half minute. Could that be a sign of things to come for Rodgers?
That's a big deal. Just think about it. You know, if he were to have to go to another team, he might have to learn a whole new offense, or he'd be sort of a push and shove with the new coach. Here he'd go in and they would hit the ground running together. So I don't discount it. Denver's got a ton of draft picks to deal with. They got a ton of salary cap space. I wouldn't rule it out.
Tom, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
You bet. It was a pleasure.
We've been talking to Tom Silverstein, Green Bay Packers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, with us today to talk about the Aaron Rodgers future, the Packers future, and whether they're going in the same direction. You can keep sharing your thoughts over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Bob writes, I hope he decides to retire before next season. Coming up tomorrow on the morning show, a lot of people have left their jobs, many of them retiring early. Get some advice on retirement during the pandemic. That's tomorrow morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. Are you looking for a new job where you'll be treated like a king? Peel Island off the coast of England has a great opportunity for you. As reported by NPR, the local government there is looking for a landlord. The job involves managing the tourist island, including a pub called the Ship Inn. The benefits? The job comes with the title of King of Peel. Your royal powers are pretty limited, I understand, but there's a ceremony. After you get hired, you follow the ritual that goes back quite a long way. You sit in an ancient chair, put on a helmet, wield a sword, and then have alcohol poured over your head. If you get the job, Your Majesty, don't forget us common folk back here in Wisconsin. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today at 6 on 1A Plus, doctors can now save lives using body parts that don't come from humans. But there are lots of ethical and regulatory issues tied to transplanting animal organs into human bodies. Jen White talks to cutting-edge surgeons about xenotransplantation. That's today at 6 on 1A Plus. Now, a group of researchers has found that poverty intervention early in life can actually have a positive impact on infants' brains. Infants in the study whose parents received a direct cash gift of $333 a month had better brain development a year into life than infants whose parents received $20 a month. We're talking about this new research, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. This research happens to come out after the expiration of a tax credit that was part of a COVID relief package. Did you benefit from that? Did it help you do things to take care of your family? Would you like to see it be made permanent? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Our guests are on the research team for the study on poverty intervention called Baby's First Years. Sonia Troller-Renfrey is a postdoctoral research associate at Teachers College, Columbia University. Sonia is also a graduate of UW-Madison. Sonia, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Sarah Halpern-Meekin is associate professor of human development and family studies at UW-Madison. Sarah, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Sarah, let's start with you. Can you talk about a big picture? This is a unique, first-of-its-kind study. What makes it unique?
Well, we know that there's an association between income and how families do, child development, those sorts of things. But it's really hard from a scientific perspective to say whether that income causes those outcomes for children and families. And so this is one of the first studies that really allows us to get at that causal question. Does income cause differences in children's development?
Can you lay out the basics of how you and your colleagues tried to figure that out?
Sure. So in this study, we worked with partners across four metropolitan areas in the United States, in New York City, Omaha, Nebraska area, New Orleans, and in the Twin Cities, a variety of areas that vary in their policy environment, the cost of living, the demographics of their population. And we went into hospitals, actually, and invited mothers 24 to 48 hours after they'd given birth to take part in a study on children's development. We were able to have 1,000 mothers agree to be part of this study. After they agreed to be part of the study, we asked them if they would be willing to be randomly assigned to receive a large or a small monthly cash gift. The large gift group receives $333 a month, and the small gift group receives $20 a month. And in our study, we use that difference between the $20 group and the $333 a month group to get that causal identification that we're interested in.
So, Sonia, here we are with our first measurements of this. You looked at the brainwaves of the infants in the study. First of all, can you tell us what brainwaves are and what they tell us about that early child development?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when you think about how do you look under the hood to see how a little baby is developing, it can be a little bit of a tricky task. Now, what EEG is, it's how we measure brainwaves, is a way of looking at how the brain is communicating. So you may know that one way that your brain cells talk to each other is by sending little electrical signals from one brain cell to the other. And when those little electrical signals are sent, some of that electricity actually escapes and travels all the way up to the scalp. And we can actually measure it just by putting a funny cap on kids' heads. And so how that works is there are little discs on the cap that we call electrodes, and they work sort of like how your voice would go into a microphone, but instead it's your brain waves going into these electrodes. And why we like EEG is it's really, really friendly to babies. We just put on a funny cap, but they can move around, they can sit on their parents' lap while we take the recording. Another reason why we like EEG is we know a little bit about how EEG develops during the first few years of life. So we know when a baby is born, they have more what we call low frequency or slower brain activity. But as they get older, there seems to be an increase in what we call faster brain activity or high frequency brain activity. And so because we know how the brain develops, we can think about how kids may differ from one another by looking at how much low frequency brain activity or slow brain activity they have compared to how much high frequency or faster brain activity they may have.
All right, so here we are, Sonia. You've got these infants with funny hats on their heads. What did you find when you looked at their brainwave activity and compared the ones who were in the two separate groups, the ones getting the $20 a month payments versus the ones getting the $330 a month payments?
That's a great question. So one of the hypotheses we had was that the infants who were in the group where the mothers received more money or the bigger cash gift, we hypothesized that they might show more of this fast brain activity compared to infants of the mothers who were in the low cash gift. So that's actually, we saw some evidence for that. Particularly, these findings provide evidence that after just about 1 year of monthly unconditional cash support, the mothers in the high cash gift group, their infants showed more fast-paced brain activity in key areas of the brain that other research has shown to support thinking and later learning.
We are talking about a new study called Baby's First Years. It's an ongoing study, I should say. Sonia Troller-Renfrey is with us from Teachers College, Columbia University, and Sarah Halpern-Meekin with UW-Madison. Part of the study giving low-income families different amounts of money, seeing how brains and cognition develop among their children. Sonia, before we bring in Sarah for some of the wider implications here, what would be the next things you'd want to look at? We've got these brainwave differences between the two groups, a good sign. What would you want to be looking for in the future to see if things, if changes are lasting?
That's a great question. One of the first things that I think I would like to look at is, you know, right now we took this measurement at 1 year of age. Our next step is actually to take this measurement again when these children are 4 years of age to see if we see the same pattern. Also at 4 years of age, we'd love to look and see if there are any differences in thinking and learning by doing really explicit cognitive tasks. Right now we say we might think there's association based on sort of broader science, but we don't know that for sure until we actually explicitly test cognitive functioning when kids are 4 years old. And then the final thing that we'd love to look at is, you know, of course, there's a sort of indirect path from money to the child, right? So cash doesn't just go into the brain. It gets into the brain likely by changing the environment this baby's in. And so starting to think about what may have changed in the environment that may have resulted in these differences we see is another question we would love to think about.
We're going to call her now. Mark is with us in Two Rivers. Mark, hi.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I have two questions. First one, what was the magic amount of money? And you talked about a lesser amount and a greater amount. Was there an amount that was in between that would be more effective, or would it require even more than the $300 that you gave? And then my second question was, I lost my train. Oh, yes. For the families that had the greater amount of money, what were they doing differently than from the families that had the lesser amount?
Sarah, let's bring you. Thanks for that question, Mark. Let's bring you in, Sarah. Now, first of all, there were just the two amounts. There wasn't a gradation where you'd mark a threshold. It was just the 20 or 333, as I understand it. But what do we know, or at least what would we want to know about what that extra 300 some bucks meant for those families?
Right. So I think what the caller is getting at is why those amounts of money, right? And these amounts were chosen based on what we know from existing research from both correlational and quasi-experimental research that indicates that amount of money between $3,000 and $4,000 a year, which some lower income families would get from, say, their tax refund from the earned income tax credit and the child tax credit, that amount of money can make a difference for how things go for families. But that amount of money is delivered through tax refunds just once a year. And so this experiment lets us see what happens when families don't have to wait for that once a year big check, but rather they get the money every month to help meet those monthly expenses if that's how they choose to use it. So that's how the amount of money was chosen based on existing research. And then the caller's second question was really getting at, I think, Sonia's last mm-hmm. point, which was, we're interested in those mechanisms, and that is one of the next things we're exploring in the study. How is it that money makes a difference for families?
Thanks for the call, Mark. We're talking to researchers Sonia Troller-Renfrey, neuroscientist from Teachers College, Columbia University, and Sarah Halpern-Meekin, sociologist at UW-Madison, about the study they're part of on how poverty interventions can affect babies' brain development. You can join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with researchers Sonia Troller-Renfrey and Sarah Halpern-Meekin. They're both part of a study called Baby's First Years, looking at how direct poverty intervention affects babies' brain development, giving cash payments to low-income families and seeing how they affect brain outcomes. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Before we go back to our callers, Sarah, based on what you've learned so far, I know there's some more to come. Do you have thoughts on policy implications?
So policy, you know, is made based on the weight of the evidence. And so I don't want to see policy get made on the basis of any one study. I think what our study helps to do in having a broader conversation about how income matters and how we can think about as a society investing in children is oftentimes those conversations get stuck on parents' behavior. So what does it mean to give families money? Well, what about those parents? And this study that Sonia's really led us in has helped us to see that we can move this conversation away from focusing exclusively on parents' behavior, and we can look at how money benefits kids. There's a really limited way that we can examine how, you know, one-year-olds are developing because they're little and they can't do all that much. And so some of the things that Sonia has helped to develop for how we can better understand children's brain development, I think can help us move that conversation to saying, how does money matter for kids without focusing on parents?
Let's go back to our callers now. Peter is with us in Kewaunee. Peter, hi.
Good afternoon.
Go ahead, Peter.
Not to stay on subject, but just a thought pattern. I'm sorry. I just feel as though the socialistic factor of our Democratic Party is trying to buy backwards from the college students being socialized into free monies to now the parents to now babies. Where is this free money coming from? It seems to be coming through a flow of our system.
But we lost Peter. Peter, I think, raising concerns about social spending like this. Either of you want to talk about that and how it fits into the work you're doing?
Sure. In the case of this study, the funding is coming through philanthropic organizations. That's who's funding the cash gifts to families. I think we often think about money as something that only certain families get, but really we have resources that go out to all families, all individuals. You know, we benefit from having roads, from public schools, public libraries. So there's a whole variety of ways that we infuse resources into communities to allow us to live the lives that we do and to live together. So I don't think this is really about redistributing all resources and, you know, taking government control of production, which is what socialism is about. This is about thinking about how we invest in development for children. And we do that in some ways through having public education, through having safe parks for children to play in. And we're in this study thinking about some of the other ways that we can also invest money in children. This is not an uncommon thing. There are lots of countries like Canada, for example, that have different kinds of child allowances or child benefits. And so this isn't far off from those sorts of things or from the child tax credit that we've long had in place in the United States.
And Sonia, can you talk about the efforts to find ways to measure the impacts of these kind of interventions, which is a huge part of what you did in this research?
Yeah, especially when we're focusing on children, one of the things that's really interesting is you can really only assess what that child can do or what you can sort of get based on their developmental age, right? So when we think about measuring what a 12-month-old knows, that can be very difficult. But as kids get older, they can start telling us more about their experience, both by sort of what their day-to-day life looks like, but also we can start doing, the examination of skills like pre-literacy or math skills. And so it's our hope to follow these kids across their development and really get a deep understanding of what cash support or unrestricted cash support in the first few years of life may do for development.
And Sonia, how long are you hoping to be able to follow this cohort of kids?
That's a great question. You know, I think, you know, any researcher like myself would love to follow them all the way to adulthood. Of course, it always takes a big team and lots of strategic planning to do so. So right now, our next planned assessment is at 4 years of age, and we're starting to think about new assessments maybe at 6 and 8 years of age, but those aren't all fully planned yet.
Time for one more caller. Dick is with us in Brooklyn. Dick, hello.
Hi. My question relates to what the root cause of the effect might be. Is it potentially better nutrition or more interactive childcare? Or have you made any attempt to look at why the money is causing this, the positive effects that you've seen in your studies?
Oh, great question there, Sarah. And I imagine it's pointing toward future parts of the research here.
Yeah, so we would love to know the answer to Dick's question. It's a question that's on the top of our mind. So we're working hard to try to figure out the answer. And part of the answer involves analyzing the data we already have. And part of the answer involves continuing to collect and analyze data as the children grow up. We think in part that it could also just differ for different families. Different families have different needs, different values, and different priorities. And giving them money in this way that doesn't require them to use it in any particular way allows them to tailor their spending to their own needs. And so there might be a whole variety of things that families are doing that are important.
Look forward to seeing more results. We'll leave it there. Sarah, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
And Sonia, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Sonia Troller-Renfrey is a postdoctoral research associate at Teachers College, Columbia University. And Sarah Halpern-Meekin is an associate professor of human development and family studies at UW-Madison. We've been talking about their study, Baby's First Years, part of a big team working on this that looks at cash grants for low-income families and how they can affect infants' brain development. Now it's time for another part of WPR's series this week, hearing from Wisconsinites about their experiences during the COVID-19 pandemic.
My name's Jackie Cutts, and I currently live in La Crosse, Wisconsin. I worked frontline from a public health standpoint on pandemic response for 2020 and all through 2021. You work all the time, and you think about it when you're not working, and it was kind of this all-encompassing thing where you just want to help people and save lives and try to guide the community through this really intense, awful experience, but then find that the very people you're trying to help, some of them are the people who don't just not want help, but they hate you for it. I still have no regrets, and I'm fiercely proud of the work that I did with my team in 2021, but there's only so many times you can, you know, be swore at and yelled at and called names and receive death threats. You know, there's only so much of that before it kind of starts to wane on you, even if you know that what you're doing is the right thing.
My name is Kyle from DeForest, Wisconsin. I live with my wife and my 2-year-old daughter. When the pandemic began, we did only want to see people outside. So we were outside on our patio. My wife and I had chairs on one side with our daughter. And my mother and my stepfather were on the other side. And that, I'm sure, was very heartbreaking that she couldn't hold her granddaughter. She didn't want to wear a mask. My mother and my sisters like to live their lives as if COVID-19 isn't really happening. So every time that we visited since then, it was the same thing. We have to be outside. And that was fine until the winter months hit. At that point, the vaccines were just coming out, and I was so excited. But then after talking to my sister, my mom decided, no, we're too hurt. We haven't seen our granddaughter or niece in 6 months. We don't think you're ready. And I couldn't believe it. I knew I was causing pain, but I just didn't know how hurt they were.
My name is Marita Stolenwerk. I have 3 children, a 5th grader and 2 4th graders, and I currently live in Brookfield, Wisconsin. During the pandemic, I was a consultant for a national firm, and when I heard that we were going to lock down, I went to go talk to my manager and I cried. I said, I don't know how I'm going to do this and have the kids at home. I remember I was rehearsing to give a presentation with my colleagues, and my daughter sat behind me and screamed because she needed my help before she could submit an assignment, and I couldn't help her because I was busy. So in December of 2020, I decided that I would apply for another opportunity. And I felt very conflicted about leaving the position that I was in. I had worked really hard to be at that position, but I felt like I was failing in so many ways. It was a little bit of a pay cut, but it is more manageable in terms of me being able to be engaged with my family.
It's part of a series of WPR stories hearing from Wisconsinites about their experiences during the COVID-19 pandemic. We'll hear another installment tomorrow. Also coming up tomorrow on Central Time, it is official. Justice Stephen Breyer is leaving the U.S. Supreme Court later this year. We'll look at his career in the court, the road ahead to a new justice, and how the court's balance has changed in recent years. And it's this week's edition of Food Friday. You may have heard about the health benefits of Mediterranean cooking. Now find out about the delicious benefits with the author of the new cookbook, Lemon, Love, and Olive Oil. That's tomorrow here on Central Time. Coming up after the news, we'll take a look at a brand new poll from Marquette University and see how Americans feel about the U.S. Supreme Court, President Biden, vaccinations, and more. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.